Welcome back to the Pilot's Lounge. On today's episode, we are joined by Eric Hill, co-founder and president of Project Echelon, a 501c3 nonprofit organization with the mission of educating, equipping, and empowering veterans in their communities through physical activity and self-discovery. Eric is also a professional cyclist and the team director for Project Echelon Racing, the professional cycling team that serves the mission of promoting the nonprofit itself. He shares with us his story, both as a leader as well as what inspired him to start Project Echelon to be able to inspire and assist veterans and their communities. As you listen to the episode, if you find yourself wanting to become involved with Project Echelon, you can find them at projectechelon.org or projectechelonracing.com, as well as on Facebook and Instagram. From wherever you are listening, sit back, grab your cup of coffee, and thanks again for joining us on the Pilot's Lounge. The holidays are here, and as we are getting closer, you don't want to wait to the last minute. Head over to www.brotalion.com, and if you're looking for something for somebody, hit that holiday gift ideas tab, and there are all sorts of items listed on there, from the mantra beanie because it's getting cold outside to the ambulance that could fly hardcover edition if maybe you're looking for something special for a kid. All sorts of great things listed on there. Be sure to check out our Instagram as well as Facebook for limited releases as well as deals that are ongoing between now and Christmas. Again, that is at www.brotalion.com. Before we dive into today's episode, a quick word from our brothers at Hangar Z.
What's going on, Brotalion? This is John Gray, host of the Hangar Z podcast. We love the Pilot's Lounge podcast and know you do as well. Hey, when you're done here, come check out the Hangar Z podcast. We're the first and only podcast promoting the personnel and equipment behind the missions in public safety aviation. You can find us at hangarzpodcast.com or anywhere where you listen to podcasts.
Welcome back to the Pilot's Lounge. On today's episode, we are joined by Eric Hill, co-founder and president of Project Echelon, a 501c3 with the mission of equipping, empowering veterans to experience life in a new and healthy way by helping them develop their emotional intelligence and connecting them with a physical challenge. Eric, welcome.
Hey, thank you guys for having me. Super excited to be here. And happy Thanksgiving.
Yeah, happy Thanksgiving. It's this probably be, hope everybody had a great Thanksgiving. We should probably say by the time that we get this out. So Eric comes to us with an interesting background that we are going to dive into today. But one of the big reasons that we wanted to bring Eric on to talk about Project Echelon was to kind of cap off our whole goal of finishing November with a month of giving, or as a month of giving, with a focus on bringing light to different nonprofit organizations that are out there, both for veterans and for the general community that people can get involved with and support. But before we dive into everything today, Eric, we like to do something on the Pilot's Lounge called Table Talk. And I'm sure if your sister is listening, she'll probably giggle because anybody in aviation knows what Table Talk is. It's typically when an instructor or a senior pilot sits down with a student or a junior pilot, and we like to say gets grilled with questions. Sometimes it's more so an educational purpose. However, here on the Pilot's Lounge, what we typically do is pick topics of any category off the wall and throw them at our guest. They can be literally from any subject area, and just to get the creative juices flowing and everybody kind of comfortable.
I'm in for it. Let's do it.
Spencer, do you have one to start off with?
You know I do. Eric, favorite dive bar anywhere in the world?
Oh, man. I'm going to go with Bodega in La Crosse, Wisconsin.
All right.
So that is
if you didn't know, fun fact, La Crosse, Wisconsin is where, it's one, where I went to college, but two, it's got the most bars per capita anywhere in the world.
Really?
Yeah. So if you have a chance to come to La Crosse, Wisconsin, it's one of the most beautiful places in the country, in my opinion, nestled right against the Mississippi River, hit Bodega.
Will do, man.
Bodega. So to give you some background on that question before we dive into the next, I think at this point we have asked every single guest we've ever had on what their favorite dive bar is. And Spencer is actually compiling a list that we do need to get up on the website. That way, if somebody's traveling to a city, they can hit up the list and be like, oh, that's a cool dive bar. We're going to go check that out. Yeah, so
I love it.
There's some background to that. Brett, do you want to hit the next one?
Yeah, absolutely. So you're from Wisconsin. I'm from Michigan. What's the real Mitten State here?
You know what? I grew up with Michigan being the Mitten State. I think Wisconsin is beyond mittens. We're more glove people, hardworking folks. you like to use our hands, and you know, mittens take away from your dexterity. So I'm just going to go ahead and say you guys can have the Mitten State. We're
beyond. That's a phenomenal answer. I like it.
Great answer.
So this is going to be a little bit different, and it's not going to have a lot of context for our listeners yet. But of any race that you have participated in, whether it's here in the States or internationally, what is your favorite race of all time, and why?
Wow, that's really hard. So racing internationally is a completely different experience from racing here in the States. Globally, cycling is the second biggest sport in the world next to soccer. And you go and race in the likes of Europe and South America. And I mean, literally millions of people show up. If you've ever watched the Tour de France, I mean, they are crowding you to the point where you can barely see where you're supposed to be going. So racing in Europe, there's a race called GP Perenchi, took place in just outside of Lille, France. And it covers multiple sectors of a very historic race, one of the oldest bike races in the world called Paris-Roubaix. And so you're racing on these 400-year-old, 500-year-old cobblestone roads that just beat the absolute shit out of you. And it's both a race of strength, but also just grit. And so you learn a lot about yourself on days like that. I think the other one for me would be here in the States would probably be the Armed Forces Cycling Classic, which takes place in Arlington, Virginia. And just before that, earlier in the day, they shut down all the freeways and they shut down the roads in the Arlington National Cemetery. And we have this massive, you know, 3,000 to 5,000 people group ride that goes through Arlington National Cemetery and a past, you know, Iwo Jima and all these, you know, wonderful places in the DC area. And then we race in downtown Arlington. So that's a really special day, obviously, given the work that we do, the mission that we have as well.
Awesome. That's fantastic. Spencer, do you have any more? Brett?
Yeah, I can do one more. I can always do one more.
Okay, send it. Send it.
So, Eric, were you born in 88?
I was. Yeah. Good year.
All right. So out of from 1988, there's a lot of good movies. I'm going to list three off. Let me know which one is your favorite and why.
Okay.
All right. So you got Die Hard, the original. Oof. You got Rain Man, or you got Big with Tom Hanks.
Wow. Three outstanding. They don't make movies like that. I mean, they do, but they're not as frequent. Like those are three historically like significant movies.
Absolutely.
All in 1988. So great year. I'd have to go with Die Hard. I mean, I don't even know how many Die Hard movies there are, but I definitely as a kid enjoyed watching those, especially how those made or came to be Christmas movies. Like part of Christmas specials is beyond me. But if I got to watch a Christmas movie, it's either like Die Hard or Elf. Like those are my two go-tos. So I'm going to go with Die Hard since we're entering the Christmas season here.
Absolutely. I keep wanting to go see the Christmas tree at Nakatomi Plaza, and I still have yet to figure out where that actual building is, but nonetheless.
Yeah. Blow it up.
Well, yeah, in the movie.
The top of it,
no,
at least.
Actually. So in real life, it's Fox Plaza, which is a 34-story, 493-foot skyscraper in LA. So neither here nor there, but there's the facts if anybody wants to go to LA and figure out where they filmed Die Hard. Yeah, absolutely. So Eric, kind of moving into where you are now, let's talk about, you know, your upbringing, kind of your pathway in life. You know, you mentioned where you went to college, which was what, University of Wisconsin La Crosse, correct?
Correct. Yep.
Okay. And kind of talk about what brought you up to where you are kind of just prior to the point where you decided, hey, I'm going to start this foundation.
Yeah. Yeah. So I grew up in just a military family. My parents did not serve. My grandfathers did. My dad, though, worked at Northwestern Military Academy as the director of buildings and grounds. So I spent a lot of time there as a kid, watching, you know, being a part of parades, being a part of honorary events, graduations, those types of things, and just always had massive respect for our servicemen and women and our veterans through that. Also kind of came through, came through the scouting program, earned my Eagle Scout. And that's just an organization that teaches you to, you know, be humble, respect others, and give back. And if you do those things, you also realize, like, it always comes full circle to benefit you and the people around you in a positive way. And so outside of those, you know, kind of two service pathways for myself, sporting has always been a part of my life. Started out younger playing junior Olympic volleyball for Team USA, and ended up not being as tall as I needed to be an Olympic volleyball player, and fell in love with running, and eventually went to UW lacrosse to run. Which is a perennial national champion contender for cross country and track, and had a wonderful career there. But my senior year ended up at national qualifiers, slipping on a barrier during steeplechase. If you know what steeplechase is, it's the 3,000 meter race that you got to go over the barriers, and they have the water barrier and that whole deal. And slipped off the water barrier and double herniated my abdomen. And that put me out of commission for running for almost a year. And just the competitive, you know, side of me said, like, no way, you're not just going to sit on the sidelines. You're going to find something to do. And so I tried swimming, wasn't my favorite thing, but ended up falling in love with the bike and really never looked back. Won the first bike race I ever did, albeit illegally. I registered under somebody else's name because I didn't have a license to race. But ended up winning the first race I ever did. And, it's just been my passion ever since. The feeling that you get, you know, flying through these corners or down these descents, it's probably, you know, with the same adrenaline rush you guys feel, flying in a helicopter, right? That's my release. That's my, that's like where I get my dopamine and serotonin. Like I got to go and ride my bike every day. It's a part of who I am.
So kind of looking at, you know, your career coming out of college, what were you doing kind of for a living outside of racing bikes at that point?
Yeah. So worked in education. Went to school to be a teacher. Taught high school biology and physics, and then kind of got into the leadership space as a assistant principal, and then doing consulting for the Department of Public Instruction, which I still do today. So again, kind of in that line of like trying to put other people and their future ahead of my own. Is really just kind of my approach to how I want to live this life is like, what can I do to give back to my community and make it better? Education has been a wonderful place for me to do that. And now what I'm doing with Project Echelon is, has been next, you know, beyond what I ever anticipated it could be.
So kind of looking, you're out of college, you're getting into bike racing. What year? I'm kind of curious, what year is this?
Yeah, this is 2010. Okay. I graduated high school in 2006. Kind of 2010 is when I when I had that injury and fell in love with bikes. So I'm, 12 years into racing at the top level here in the United States. And it's been a hell of a learning curve. I started racing kind of like I would run, right? Like fastest man wins, whoever can go the hardest, for the longest is going to be the winner of the race. And I've learned quickly that bike racing doesn't quite work the same way. There's a lot more tactics involved between drafting and echelons in the wind and all of those types of things. And it's been, I mean, I'm 34 going on 35 here, and I own my own team. And I'm still learning. Like, there's something new to learn every day, which is one of the reasons I love it as much as I do.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's, we'll backtrack here, or actually fast forward here. It's 2015, yeah. The year before you started Project Echelon.
Yeah.
What is this year like? What sparks that fire to say, hey, you know what? I'm committing myself to starting this foundation, and this is like what I want out of this. Kind of what led to that inception of Project Echelon?
Yeah, that's a great question. So 2010, we're in the middle of a freaking recession, right? And so when I like first fell in love with cycling, there's 20 to 30 professional cycling teams in North America. My athletic background and kind of where I thought I could get, should have put me on a trajectory to be on one of those teams. And due to the recession, sponsors pulled back money, and, 75% of those teams were gone, by 2012. Like there were 6 to 8, professional teams in the US. And so obviously that created limited opportunities. So I found myself really scrapping to get the experiences and the opportunities that I wanted to go and do these biggest races, in the US, let alone internationally. And it was a grind. It was an absolute grind. I knew other people were struggling with the same thing, right? So, the opportunity came to me when Eric Beach, my co-founder, and military veteran, Army, infantry, had reached out in 2015. And, he had said, hey, I just made a third attempt at suicide. I took an entire bottle of pills, and my wife found me. I left a note that just simply said, I'm sorry. And, luckily she got me to the ER before I lost my life. And, obviously that led to some very serious conversations, within his family. And, he came to the realization that he needed to get physical again, that in the service, PT was where he found community, and he found like his center, his roots. And he completely abandoned that, post-service. But he had no idea how the hell to get engaged in physical activity again. Like, he didn't know where to start, but he decided that he wanted to do a triathlon. And his wife and my wife were friends in high school, followed each other on social media. And she knew that I was racing at, bikes at a high level, and suggested that he reach out to me. So he did. And I agreed to coaching him, to do his first triathlon. So provided him some coaching plans, some nutritional resources, helped him get his first bicycle, just walked him through that process of, how do you register an event? How do you appropriately train for an event? What are you going to experience that day? And 6 months later, he completed his first triathlon and immediately knew his life had changed. He fell in love with it and made a commitment to making himself better through physical activity. It gave him structure, routine, and purpose every single day. A year later, he's completely sober and on a television show called NBC Quest for Kona, racing in Nice, France, with an opportunity to get to Ironman World Championships in Hawaii. That show and our story of two friends coming together to change his life in a positive way as a military veteran struggling with a TBI, PTSD, and addiction, was on national television. And we had an outcry of people saying, that's me. I need that type of help. How do I do this? And, we decided, we're only two people. We can't do that for hundreds, right? But if we started our own organization, if we started our own team, and that team carried that mission, and we used it as a way to build our network and our community and to get the support of our partners to embody that and provide this type of service to more people in need, let's do it. And we went full stick and made a commitment to it in 2016. And it's grown ever since.
That's pretty incredible. And definitely incredible starting story in terms of just the basis of it, because I think like all of us, you know, we all know somebody who's perished in under kind of the premise of our whole mission, you know, but I think it does entirely play in different, when you have a situation like that, where it's your best friend and this is something that he was right there. And now it is your mission really in life to, you know, promote this cause and to develop this and benefit that. So that's kudos to you guys. That's really incredible. And
when I tell him, we obviously still talk quite a bit. But if I would have, even if it would have just been him, if he was the only life I would have impacted, like, and that's you've changed somebody's life. And like when I have the opportunity to get on podcasts or to talk to people in the community, like make that your goal. Like start with one. And if that's all you're able to help, like then fine. But you've saved one person's life. How many people get to say they've done that? And if you're inspired to do more, if you have the financial capacity to do more, if you have the network to do more, like do it. I promise that it will reward you, you know, through friendships, through just positive self-outlook, through the professional network you build, like you will be rewarded for the good deeds that you do. But you have to start. You have to start somewhere.
Absolutely. Do you mind talking a little bit about some of the programs over time that have developed that are kind of the cornerstone, obviously outside of the professional race schedule that you guys do, is that means to build awareness, what specific programs for veterans you guys are carrying out?
Yeah. So our entire mission is it's to educate, equip, and empower veterans through physical activity. And endurance sport is kind of our bread and butter, whether it be triathlon, marathon, trail running, or cycling. Cycling is where we primarily live, but endurance sport is, you know, is kind of the full scope of what we support. And for those of you that engage in endurance sport, you know that the barrier to entry can be pretty daunting. Just like it was for Eric Beach, right? Like when I first had that conversation with him, it's like, all right, dude, you want to do a triathlon? Like, do you have a bike? No. When's the last time you ran? When I left the service? Okay. You've been swimming much? He's like, I actually don't know how to swim. All right. We're off to a pretty shitty start, but like, let's start. That's objective number one. And so there's those types of barriers, these knowledge gaps. And then there's financial gaps, like especially triathlon and cycling are not cheap. They are amazing. It's an amazing sport. It's an amazing therapy, but it's not cheap. Like even an entry level bike that I would trust, bringing to a race type event is going to cost a minimum of $1,200 to $1,400. And so we knew that we had to remove some of those financial barriers for people as well. So we have knowledge barriers, we have financial barriers, and then we have experiential barriers. Just people being able to talk to other people who have been there, done that, and can build confidence in them and help them know what they're walking into. And so those are kind of the services that we provide. We have a coaching and mentoring service. So connect you with one of the 13 professional riders on the team to really be your mentor, to establish a relationship with you. Somebody that if you have a question, you're in a pinch, you need to know, you know, should I buy this or should I buy that? Or should I be eating 10 bananas a ride or should I be having some bottles and goos? Like, message that person on social media, give them a call, send them an email. Like, we want to be here to help. And then we have monthly webinars as well that are open to everybody. We always have a mental wellness segment. So we bring in, you know, a counselor, or we bring in a psychologist or a sports psychologist, or a motivational speaker. We do a mental wellness minute. We always have something that's related to training and physical activity. So talking about equipment or training principles or nutrition principles. We always have a partner segment. So we bring in maybe like a shoe partner or a bike partner, let them talk about their equipment, let them talk about, you know, the benefits to using their equipment, but then also talk about why they love the veteran community and the support that they have for them, so that these men and women can truly see like there are people standing by your side even when you don't know it. And just that reminder on a monthly basis can go a really long way and prevent somebody from taking a bottle of pills. And then we have a networking and community segment as well. So just getting people to know each other from around, you know, the country. But one of the beautiful stories that we had this past year, we have a lot, but there's these two gentlemen, Adam Zimmerman and Kyle Dow, never met each other before. They both joined the organization in 2021, and they met each other through this webinar series that we were doing. And they decided, hey, let's put together a race calendar where we can go and do all these events together so we're not alone. They ended up being an absolutely epic and competitive team, winning races like Breck Epic, which if you're in the cycling world, you know that that is, that's the Rose Bowl of mountain biking, right? So, but now like they're close friends, they know each other's families, they've traveled together, they've lived together. We have people flying from Alaska to North Carolina to meet somebody that they've only ever met online because their relationship with them is that strong now. So that program is incredible. But then to work with our endemic partners to remove those financial barriers is another huge part for us. So all of our partners offer really employee pricing discounts on the equipment that that they sponsor us through. So Argon 18 bikes or Jackroot clothing or Cast helmets or whatever it is, you know, you've now taken a $1,800 racing machine and turned it into a machine that you could, you know, there's no other way you could afford that. But it's now the same price as a bike at Walmart. It's a pretty incredible opportunity. But then we also offer financial scholarships through our organization as well. So the way that we're set up is 22% of all of the sponsor dollars that come to Project Echelon as a professional cycling team go towards the Veteran Foundation. And then any dollars that are donated specifically to the foundation obviously go to the Veteran Fund and Foundation as well. And so we provide scholarships and stipends through that to help remove those financial barriers too.
That's incredible too. And, you know, especially, and these guys can attest because they're probably tired of seeing bike related things on my Instagram page, but you know, a lot of coworkers have actually, because I'm still on the active side, a lot of coworkers have talked about that in terms of, man, that looks really cool. But, I mean, they pull up online, they're like, oh, what's a good bike brand? And they go on whatever X, Y, or Z bike brand's website or just whatever. And they see, you know, $4,200 or again, at the very entry level, $1,500 these days. And it's an almost an immediate turnoff for them because they're like, ah, well, I'll just stay going to the gym, even though they think that would be fun and they think it'd be something that they want to do. And maybe the gym doesn't provide that same type of release for them. And you know, some it does, some it doesn't. It's just a lot of times an immediate turnoff. So if I were that person in that position, how would I go about engaging Project Echelon as an organization to say, hey, you know, how do I get involved in being part of this community and removing some of these barriers and you know, educating myself on how to participate?
Yeah, I think one of the things we're most proud about for Project Echelon is that if you're a veteran, we want to serve you. It doesn't matter if you have a disability. It doesn't matter which branch you served in. It doesn't matter how long you served. If you're a veteran, we're here for you. And we're a non-membership fee-based organization. And all you need to do is go to projectechelon.org and fill out the contact form. And within 72 hours, you'll get an outreach from one of our professional racers who is going to welcome you into our community and immediately start the goal setting process with you. Try to understand, you know, who you are, why you've reached out, and what your objectives of being a part of our community are. And once we've kind of learned that about you, we put together a plan that is suitable for your needs, and gets you engaged in our community in the right way. And so it's an open door policy. Again, we don't want to be limiting in who we invite in. And we don't want to be competitive, you know, with other nonprofits either. I think one of the things that we also pride ourselves in is if we don't have the right service for you, we're not in the business of competing for people in order to get dollars. Like that's not, unfortunately, that the nonprofit world falls into that trap often. But that's not why we're here. We're here to serve you. And so if we can't meet your needs, we're going to find somebody who can. And we're going to direct you to them. And we're still going to invite you to be here if this is a place that you also want to be. But our first and primary objective is to serve you in a way that fills the gaps in your life that are going to allow you to be successful at home or in the workplace or in your community.
That's awesome, man. With regards to your team, so you have the professional racing team. Is it kind of twofold question? Is it the same individuals that are reaching out and sort of mentoring these veterans and stuff? So is there overlap there with regards to like the foundational portion of it versus the professional guys? Is it the same team or do you have separate people on each side?
Yeah. So I can explain the structure of it too, but sometimes people are like, wait, it doesn't make sense. But so we have a professional cycling team and a nonprofit. The professional cycling team falls under the realm of the nonprofit, but two branches, right? The veteran community and the professional cycling team. The professional cycling team's mission is to use the platform that professional sport provides us in the hundreds of communities that we travel to around the world to share the importance of supporting our veteran community, right? And then to give them resources to help them do that. Every community that we go to and compete in, we always engage in either a VA visit, a VFW visit, a veteran community ride, a coffee fireside chat, something of that nature. So we want to connect with the community and empower them to do more for our veterans. And we want to connect with our veterans to give them resources to empower themselves. The team, the professional racing team, actually doesn't have any military veterans on it. If we had a military veteran who was of the caliber to race professionally, 100% we would take them on. A lot of them are 28 years old with blown out knees and a blown out back and demanding the things that we would demand of them would not lead to a good mental state for some. But there's also power in these professional civilian athletes connecting with military veterans in the way that they do. One of the things that Eric Beach said to me very early on was what was different about talking to me versus talking to a veteran brother was that he felt supported by somebody that maybe didn't understand, right? Like one of the things that our veterans often struggle with is they feel that the only people that understand them are other veterans. and knowing that they have the support of and the empathy of and the network of these non-veterans is really important, because they truly feel that somebody gets them or is at least trying to get them, trying to understand them. And it kind of removes them from some of the negative aspects of military and veteran culture of, Eric calls it the three B's, but I think it's bullets, babes, and beers. But it removes them from some of those stigmas, right? Like, we want to connect with you in a positive way that gets you outside of that, you know, recurring, culture that sometimes can lead you down a negative path. Not that all of those things are bad all of the time, but, being a part of something else can be positive too.
Brett, do you have something?
Yeah, I do. Just like you, for all of us, physical fitness is a huge part of our life and something that we've kind of leaned upon through times of stress. I know for sure, whether it's the weight room or hockey or lacrosse, for me, it's a place where you can totally just reset your mind and kind of give your mind a break from all those daily thoughts that you can never get rid of. Would you be able to talk on an experience for you that you really, you know, you were stressed or went through a challenge in your life and you really leaned upon cycling or cross country or your physical fitness to kind of guide you through it?
Yeah. And I think it's one that any family person can relate to, but, I'm a better dad and a better husband when I go and ride. I mean, my wife will look at me sometimes and be like, you need to go ride your bike. You need to leave and go do a race. And when I come back, like I hit the reset button. And like, I'm there for my kids. I'm there for my wife when she needs me. And all of that needs to happen in balance, right? Like, physical activity can become an addiction too, in a negative way. And, we can abuse it. But when it is utilized with purpose, it is very powerful. And so for me, some of the conversations that I have with the men and women that are part of our organization, right? Like, hearing about people's suicide attempts is not an easy thing to hear on a regular basis. And being able to just hear that, internalize it, go and smash 2 hours of really hard riding and get like all that negative energy and negative thoughts out and come back with a really powerful idea on how to create an opportunity or a service or something that can change that storyline for that person. You know, I wouldn't be able to do that if I wasn't engaging in physical activity, if I wasn't riding my bike. And you know, it's, like I said, it's in my personal life, it's the same with my family. It's the same in the workplace. And if you look at our website, you know, one of the things, Eric Beach is a very amazing storyteller. And, you know, he talks about vehicles, combustion engine vehicles have an exhaust. And if they didn't, the engine would explode, right? It wouldn't work. We're no different. Like, we need an exhaust system. And if we don't, we are going to implode. Like, we are going to break down one way or another. And physical activity is that exhaust system. And so whether that's stress at work, stress at home, or anxiety for yourself, like, this is an anywhere, anytime therapy that you don't have to wait to get into the VA. You don't have to wait to see your therapist. You don't have to, you know, make sure your friend picks up the phone to talk you off that ledge. Like, go for a run, lace up your shoes, like, put on your helmet, go ride your bike. Like, throw on some music, go lift some weights. Like, you can do that regardless of where you are in the world and the situation that you're in. And that's what we want to empower people with.
But yeah, that's an awesome response. And I think it's super important, especially if you grew up being physically, you know, physically fit or hitting the gym or whatnot. And it kind of leads into another part of it too, which is that competitiveness. A lot of us, as we grow up and we move on to our careers or whatever, we don't get to experience that competitiveness and that drive to compete and win and be better than the other guys, or, you know, even learn from our failures and losing or whatnot. I think it's such it's a part of me, I'll tell you right now, that I'm missing. I want to get back into whatever it is, men's league hockey or, you know, some type of sport where I'm competing against someone else. I think that's something that I truly am missing right now, based on where I am. So I think it's
hardest step is signing up, man. Yeah. You just got to sign up, Brett, and then it forces you to do it.
It's literally the whole, I mean, Brett, to your point, that's the whole reason I came back to bike racing after I left, because it's exactly what you said. I was like, cool, yeah, I go to the gym, I do all this stuff, but I missed that competitive aspect. And sure, like, triathlons are there, but it's not, and not to crap on any triathletes. I've done I did my share of them, but it's not quite the same as being shoulder to shoulder with people in a Peloton going, you know, 30 miles an hour around corners. It's just not the same. It's not the same as, you know, body checking somebody into the side of an ice rink or something like that. Like that competitive aspect, I think, is honestly what builds community. And to the points, for instance, specifically in cycling, that's as easy as going out and riding with a good buddy and continually attacking each other on that ride to push each other, because for whatever sadistic reason, we find that to be fun because it's building that community. And I think it truly goes back on the veteran aspect to just innately what we are used to. And it translates pretty much one for one in that we build bonds through suffering with one another, whether that's in the field, in the middle of the desert on a deployment, whatever that might be. We tend to build bonds through that suffering, or through those potentially not negative experiences, but through those testing experiences, I'll say, which I think is something that's really awesome with what you were doing. But going back to what you were previously talking about in terms of the events that you guys go to, and some of those things like the fireside coffee chats and the, not necessarily, I don't want to say meet and greets, but those visits to those places. If you guys are doing those and somebody, you know, let's say you're going to Tulsa Tough or you're going to Littleton or one of these races, and somebody is going to be in that area or wants to link in with you guys, what is the best way for them to find out those events and where those are going to happen?
Yeah. So before I answer that question, I'm going to actually give a plug for our Grand Fondo. So in March of 2023, March 10th through the 12th, we're going to have our Project Echelon Grand Fondo. It'll be at the tail end of our team training camp. So the entire team will be there. And we're opening our doors to have community rides, to have dinner together, and just enjoy camaraderie. And we'd invite anybody listening to come and be a part of that. So that's the 10th through the 12th in Tucson, Arizona, in March. And last year we did it in North Carolina in Winston-Salem, and we had over 300 people come to our first ever event. So just an incredible way to meet people. But to your point, yeah, we're going to be releasing our race calendar here soon. And then the best way to keep up with that is to, make sure you bookmark our website, which is project-echelon-racing.com. There'll be updates on there with our calendar and the events that we're doing around that. And then to follow us on Instagram and Facebook at Project Echelon Racing. But with that too, we don't have all of these scheduled out. We raced almost 160 race days last year, right? That's a lot. If we're going to be in your community and you have a group that you're a part of that you would love for us to engage with, like, reach out to us and help us co-plan that. We want you to be, you know, a part of that process, and feel involved. And so, yeah, if we're going to go to Littleton, and, you know, in the past we've done a VA hospital visit there, but I mean, maybe you're a part of this amazing veteran baking group. I don't care what it is. Like, we would love to come and learn about you and your baking group and make some cookies together. And it doesn't have to be about bikes. It doesn't have to be about physical activity. We want to learn about you and the amazing things you're doing. And so if you've got ideas, let us know, and we'd love to support those.
That's awesome. And kind of shifting gears slightly on the note of some of the outreach stuff and some of the things that you guys have recently been putting together and or have done here recently. I saw you guys just released your own podcast or are releasing Project Echelon podcast.
Yeah. It's called The Sticky Bottle. If you're looking for something that's not cycling related and you just want a bunch of like behind the scenes bro stories, check out the Sticky Bottle podcast. But we're just pulling back the curtain. A lot of funny and stupid things happen when 13 guys get in a van with a trailer and literally drive from coast to coast three times in the course of a season, right? Things break down. Hotels start on fire. We had a guy, he went to Rebecca's Private, Idaho. We got him an Airbnb, him and two of our teammates. And place burned down overnight while they were there. They lost all their stuff. Like stories like that, that, you know, they don't make it onto social media, but we're pulling back the curtain and telling that kind of stuff. Or how, you know, what is it like going grocery shopping for eight guys for a week long stage race when everybody's consuming 2,500 calories a day, right? Like, or whatever. It's pretty funny stuff. So Sticky Bottle podcast, definitely check that out. We do a quarterly newsletter as well that you can find if you go to the news section of our website. It tells some amazing stories of things that we do there.
Have you guys launched that podcast yet?
Yeah, it's on Spotify.
Okay, sweet.
Just the pilot episode is out. We recorded our second one. So we're going to try and release every Monday. Okay. They're not probably as quality as this will be as far as sound and editing and things like that. We literally just recorded it on Zoom and captured the audio file and put it out there. But we figured
there, go listen to ours from a year or two years ago.
Early stuff is suspect at best. That's sweet,
to your
man.
Point, Brett, though, right? Like you just got to start. You just got to start. And once you start, yep, then everything else falls in place.
Get the ball rolling. Can you talk to us and our audience a little bit about what it's, I think this is a perfect segue into this question too, talking about being on the road with all these guys and the challenges and stuff that you come into, whether it's, you know, individuals with their own mindsets or a house burning down or whatever. But can you speak to some challenges of leadership when it comes to managing a large group of highly driven and competitive adults in those types of situations?
Yeah. It was funny because when we released that first episode of the podcast, we had a couple people reach out and be like, man, it sounded like being with my platoon again, and just the conversations that we would have. And then how I, being on the podcast, was kind of the platoon sergeant, where like I needed to redirect us and get us on track before we said something stupid. And it, you know, it, like you said, there's a lot of different personalities. These guys are very successful in what they've done. They wouldn't be on this team if they weren't. And they've all found that success through, you know, varying paths. So just like with any good team, right? Like you have to figure out each individual's strengths and what makes them tick. And then you have to figure out their weaknesses and what causes them to crumble. And then, you have to put together a game plan that battles against that, whether that be traveling. We have some guys that, you know, 4 hours in a car and you think they're ready to quit bike racing altogether. They just absolutely crack. And then there's others where if we have pasta three nights in a row, like they're going to leave the team house and go eat at a restaurant by themselves, or, you know, just little, it's the little things, right? Just like in any relationship, there's typically not big blow ups that, that create strain. It's like, it's just, the little things that you do that irk somebody just the wrong way, that eventually lead to something bigger than it should have been. And, we employ a lot of the same strategies that we use with our veteran community within the team. smart goal setting, weekly calls, check-in texts, journaling, you know, having group leaders who can help to facilitate conversations, or captains that they can go and talk to bring something to management so that we can address the issue head on and not create tension within the group. So all of that is necessary. I think the thing that is helpful with our group is that with the veteran work that we do, we realize that our problems that we have are pretty small. They're small world problems. They really don't, it doesn't, to put it blunt, it doesn't fucking matter. Right. Like there's a guy that we talked to, you know, last week that, was in a Hummer with six guys. Everybody but him died. Like, so we listen to a story like that and try to onboard a person like that. And then you go to a race and somebody wants to complain about what food you put on the table, like, shut up, dude. Doesn't matter. It keeps us pretty grounded. It really does. And so we often talk about how, you know, being a professional sports team that has a purpose and a mission behind it, you know, keeps things in perspective always. Even when we win, we didn't win by ourselves. We get to share that win with somebody. When we lose, we didn't lose. Because earlier that day we went to the VA and we met with 100 people who haven't had a visitor in 3 weeks, right? Like there, we won that weekend because we changed somebody's life in a positive way. And so, it's always more beautiful to share a win with more people, with a fan base. And we have that, and it's always easier to overcome a loss when you have something positive to look back on, and we have that too. And so I think we're really lucky to have, you know, this group of people around us that support us and we support them.
It's an excellent mindset to have, I think, with an approach to life and how you guys carry yourselves and conduct business. So commend you guys for, you know, using perspective and channeling your thoughts that way. You mentioned journaling a little bit. Can you expand on that? Is that something that you do personally? Is that something that your entire team does? And what does your journaling regimen, if you will, look like on a day-to-day, or I don't know if you do it daily or, you know, weekly, however you...
I mean, Nick, you'll probably get this, but you probably use a tool like called Training Peaks. So every single one of us uses an online tool called Training Peaks that, you know, not only tracks our physical performance and each of our rides, but there's also a place in there to journal on how you felt that day physically and emotionally, how your sleep was, and then to leave just open comments. And we as a management team have access to that. And we can see how people are trending, like, and you missed four nights of sleep in a row, like something's going on. You've said that you've been in a poor emotional state for 3 weeks now, like you should probably go talk to your psychologist, right? Or, hey, like you've been in an amazing mood. What's going on? Like, what can we celebrate together? So, you know, it's nothing special. It's an app that almost every endurance athlete would use. And so we use that with both our pro team, but also with our veterans. With our veterans, we use actually a tool called Zihi Pro. This is really cool. We used to try and do it with Training Peaks, but we grew to the point where we could no longer keep up with writing individualized training plans for 500 people with 13 guys trying to do that. It was just not manageable. So we partnered with this company called Zihi Pro that uses AI technology to learn people's habits, their schedules, and their goals, and uses a set of 1,000 rules that were written by coaches to design customized training plans for them. But then within that, there's also that journal aspect, and we get notifications based on how people journal. So, you know, their mental state, their physical state, their sleeping state. And then we know, okay, hey, it's time to check in with this person if they're in a bad place.
So kind of talking a little bit to your point on to kind of expand on the Training Peaks aspect a little bit to kind of connect the two with what you're talking about, Spencer, as well. So what's interesting with Training Peaks, and it, not really necessarily a plug for them, but kind of understanding the way that the journaling works, right? So, or the journaling per se, we can say works. So let's say, Spencer, you go and crush out a workout in the gym and you have like your Whoop, or if you have a Garmin or whatever on your wrist, you log that workout and it automatically uploads it to Training Peaks to track your heart rate, whatever, you know, timeline or time frame you did. Let's say you can look at a graph that shows like when your heart rate spiked, and maybe if you have a Garmin, you can put in, you know, your sets, and it'll maybe overlay those sets onto whatever that performance data is, right? But then on top of that, it'll give you what's called a TSS or a training stress score to show you, I don't know if Whoop does that particularly. Garmin, I know. Yep. Yeah. So Garmin does the same thing. And then on, so the, it used to not, back in the day, it used to not be this way, but now they basically, you remember the chart that you would see in every doctor's office when you were a kid that says like on a scale of 1 to 10, how do you feel? 1 being like a super mad frowny face and 10 being like a super elated happy dude. Literally, that's what you have. You can select a little face and then a scale of 1 to 10 on how intense it felt, which is basically translated to RPE or rate of perceived exertion. And then you can add comments. So for instance, like this week for me, because I've been off all week, it's been a super high volume. And on a day-to-day basis, I can go in there and type in, cool, this is how I felt today. I can look at my Garmin and see, like, I don't really go off the sleep score, but I can see, you know, how I slept and put in, you know, how my legs felt, how my heart rate was, like if I felt like I was going to die when I should have been in a super easy state, like all of that stuff you can type into the comments. And then it gives your, I think the mental aspect of it is interesting because it gives whoever is monitoring, whether it's your coach or whoever else, a look at how you are perceiving your state to be. Like I could feel good. Like I might've felt really strong, but a workout that was supposed to be easy maybe felt really hard. So you know, it's kind of weird when you start looking at all the combinations of those things, but it essentially is it's a digital logbook of, it's a digital workout journal is essentially what it is. So, yeah. But Spencer, do you have anything else on that?
No, man, I appreciate you sharing that. I've been trying to force myself into getting into a habit of at least doing like gratitude or something. And I'm not to the point where I'm doing it daily or anything really, but I'm just open to hearing about anybody who successfully does that and how they go about doing it. So I'd probably need to do some research and see if
we'll... I think it's six.
No, yeah, go ahead, Sorry.
I was going to say, I think it's successful because it's a forced part of your routine, right? Like as soon as I end my workout, it automatically uploads to Training Peaks and I get a notification on my phone that reminds me of my journal.
I love that.
And if I don't do it, like my coach sees it and my peers see it. And like
it's that accountability aspect, I think, that really holds people to it.
For sure.
And you know, another thing too, you know, there are a lot of things out there to your point, in terms of gratitude and daily, not to get down a religious, but there's like devotional, there's all sorts of daily things out there that people can do to express whatever that is, whether it's, you know, reading, an experience somebody's had or reading a Bible, whatever that might fall into. There's all kinds of tools out there, for people to use those kinds of things, but kind of shifting a little bit back onto the team itself, Project Echelon, kind of to give our listeners an idea of just when we talk about cycling, I would say the vast majority of our listeners probably have no idea the breadth of really what it involves. Most of them maybe have watched Tour de France, but it's probably been several years. And the only thing they know about cycling is that, golden child from seven Tour de France wins. You know, that's typically what a lot of people associate the sport with, when in all reality, like people don't understand what American crit racing is. People don't understand what road racing is and all of this kind of stuff. So to kind of give some background, in a very black and white term, right? So road racing are basically long events on a bike on a road. Crit racing is essentially, the best way I can describe it, is a circuit race, not really NASCAR, but more like sport car racing, in downtown environments, think tight turns, fast corners, very, very high speed, shorter
party atmosphere,
huge crowd atmosphere, almost electric, honestly. It's really impressive to see. And then you talk about stage races. It's basically just multiple days of different types of racing, or maybe the same type of racing. And then, of course, you have track racing, which is similar to NASCAR, but on a bike, on a fixed gear bike in a velodrome or a oval type of track. So to give some background on quite how humble Eric is on the success of Project Echelon, just talking about 2022, only for the ACC, which is the American Criterium Cup, I believe Project Echelon as a team finished second in point standings to Best Buddies Racing. Overall, Brandon Fahiri, aka Monk, took the overall as well as the sprinter's jersey, I believe. And if I'm not mistaken, you guys also had Ethan Crane in the top five, and then Ethan Crane took second in the Pro One Sprint. And that's just for crit racing, not to include...
Andy won the U23 category, right? As yep. Well.
Took the U23 category. On top of that, I saw you guys had you guys have some ongoing success on the track. National TT Championship, I believe.
So we have a two-time national champion, time trialist, took second at Pro Nationals in the road race and fifth in the Criterium. And then, stage racing is really our bread and butter. And we won the Redlands Bicycle Classic, won four stages of the Tour of the Gila, and took third in the overall at the Joe Martin stage race in Arkansas. So, 2022 was a breakout year for a lot of reasons and in a lot of ways.
So to kind of give people an idea, he mentioned earlier the difference in what bike racing looked like in 2010 with this massive amount of teams and events. And that's honestly a couple years before I took a break from the sport. And there, any given weekend, you could go anywhere in the U.S. and there was going to be an event. Tons of teams, tons of people racing. Well, fast forward, 10, 12 years, a lot of those events are less. So the stage races that he listed off are pretty much the majority of the U.S. stage races that are remaining, save for Green Mountain stage race. But talk about what made you guys decide, hey, we're going to step up to the next level of professional team, because you guys raced last year as a domestic elite team. And this year you're racing as a UCI, which is the international governing body for professional cycling. You guys are now registered as a continental pro team, which is basically two steps down from Tour de France level for people to kind of gauge where they are on the spectrum of professional racing.
Yeah, I like to tell people we're major league soccer, basically, right? You got the Premier League, and then you got the leagues below that, and you got major league soccer here in the U.S. Like that's the equivalent of where we are. But really, what it does is opens doors for us to do more international level racing. We with our mission and our stakeholders being obviously U.S. based. We're committed to growing the sport and the culture of cycling here in the United States. Like that is our primary focus. And so we'll always do the major races and race series that are here in the US so we can build that fan base. But we also know that by going and racing internationally, we build a certain level of validation for not only the team, but for the sport here in the United States. Again, like you said, people know about cycling because of Lance Armstrong, for better or worse, and what he did in European racing. To be able to go and say that we're racing in Belgium, in France, Rwanda, Colombia, all of these places, and then to bring that talent and those experiences back here stateside, that does something for our fan base, that does something for our culture, and it internationalizes our mission. And by the way, even when we go and race internationally, we've visited NATO headquarters before. We go to military bases abroad. We've even brought veterans from our veteran community abroad with us and given them the pro cycling experience and had them in the team car and in feed zones and things like that. And so, everything is centered around that mission of really you know, sharing our story and sharing the impact behind it, and then trying to get more people to understand the benefits of that.
That's really incredible too, because I think a lot of people, whether they're involved in cycling or not, even for someone who is not involved, for instance, if like Spencer being a Knoxville native, you might've actually been in town when they had the US Pro Championships there. I don't know if you went downtown to watch that. But I mean,
Chiltook Hill.
Yeah. I mean, downtown Knoxville, if you look at the photos, the street, all of them were just packed,
and it's, yeah, it was chaos,
you know, right there in the center. And that's the, I mean, that's a criterium race, and that's that, you know, electric community we're talking about. But when you take that internationally to kind of what Eric was talking about, into a community where this international fan base is in the millions at these events, it's like, it's literally something you would see on TV. And it's really awesome that you guys are sharing those experiences with people, because I think if you guys weren't doing it, those are experiences that are often both unaffordable and really just out of question for people to get to experience what a team car looks like, or what being part of that team, even in the feed zone, passing off, which a lot of people don't realize is a critical component, because if you miss food in a feed zone during a long race, you're done. You're fucked, for lack of better terms, because you're going to run out of, you're going to bonk, you're going to be dead.
I'm always in feed zone, bro.
but that's really incredible. Guys, do you have anything remaining?
No, I mean, I just think what you guys are doing is super inspiring. And I think there's so many carryovers to, I mean, what we do in our community. So can't thank you enough for coming on and giving us a few, you know, an hour or two of your time here on, Black Friday morning. It's always a busy time of year.
I didn't want to go to the stores anyway.
Yeah.
That's the perfect excuse not to go shopping.
Yeah, that's more chaotic. That's
go
more
ahead,
chaotic
honey. I got to do some work.
Yeah.
So Eric, something we like to close out with every guest is kind of a piece of advice, and yours is obviously going to be slightly different from something aviation centric. However, kind of what we came up with to ask is if you could give one piece of advice to an adult taking on a leadership role of a group of competitive, versatile other adults, whether that's in management and business, whether that's as a team director for a professional team, or in any capacity, what would your advice be on how to be successful at that?
Don't try to control it. Figure out how to embrace it. People who are driven, motivated, and successful are, they're not here to be told no. They want to hear yes and. And you need to be the person that can help figure out how to facilitate that in a way that creates positive outcomes for everybody involved in your organization. If you tell them no and you try to stop it, they're going to either leave, or they're going to find a way to work around you. And neither of them are going to have a positive outcome for you or the other people around them. So figure out what their strengths are, figure out what makes them tick, and figure out, you know, what their individual goals are, and then help them see how that fits into the bigger picture, and give them a goal, give them an objective. And I would give it to them in two ways, like give them the big picture and then give them the small achievable goals that lay a path for them to find success. And if you do that, you're going to be happy with the outcome. And that's, you know, that's what got us from being just a group of guys that, you know, drove around the country in a van and finished mid pack to a team that was considered a favorite at every start line, at every race in 2022, was we figured out how to utilize the assets that we had within our program in the right way.
That's incredible.
That's great advice. Thank you for sharing that. I know you mentioned it earlier in the episode, but just to bring everybody back, before we close out, for our listeners, where can they find you on social media and on the web, et cetera?
Yeah. We'd love for you to follow us on both Facebook and Instagram, at Project Echelon Racing. And if you go to projectechelonracing.com, you can learn more about our team. You can fill out the contact page to get involved as either a supporter and a donor or as a veteran looking to benefit from the services and the community that we have to provide. But regardless, we're here for you, and we really appreciate you inviting us in to reach a new group of people and to be able to tell our story. So thank you. Thank you so much.
Awesome. Thank you so much for joining us this morning, Eric.